There are pretenders among us, people who have mastered the ability to hide their pain, failures, struggles, and inadequacies in life. People who have the ability to mask their imperfections through material wealth and careers. In the last 20 years, social media has exploded and incubated these pretenders to grow in number and attitude. But one day in 2016, one of these pretenders broke away. This is his story. Hi and welcome to the show. My name is Jay and this is the Pretender Podcast. Thanks for tuning in to listen to the latest episode of the Pretender Podcast on the AfriPods Network right here in Africa. You can listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast network of your choice. In today's show, I talk to my good friend Pete about his experience living the corporate and Western life to move to Africa. Though the audio is not 100% perfect due to us doing it first time and sitting too comfortably in the lounge, which didn't help our sound quality, we sincerely apologize for that, but I still believe it is worth listening to and hope that you enjoy it as I did. Enjoy.
Well, my brother, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks for coming through. 12 hours driving plus.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah, but you're here, and I'm glad we're gonna do this.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah,
it's first time for everything. So.
Yeah, but let's do the basics first, bro. Let's introduce you to our listeners. Pete is someone that's very special in my life. We met back in 2015. Yeah, 2015, just a year after I came back to Lusaka. And when I first met you, I thought you were Russian. I think it was Zamshu when we were playing, still playing ball on Sundays, and we were playing on the outdoor courts. And you came, and then we didn't connect on that level the first time, but then you needed the software.
Photoshop.
Yeah, it was Photoshop. I thought it was Adobe. And I remember I posted it on the group and I said I could hook you up. And
that's the Russian movie. Everything pirated.
Yeah, so then you came to my place and we spoke a bit, obviously. And then I came to your place as well. I was picking up something also. I was taking for you to do this or whatever, but
you got that in
there. Right. But then we got talking like on WhatsApp and we got to know each other. But you had just been a father
before you left WhatsApp, you mean?
And it was late 2015 going into 2016, and then I was leaving work about that time. I was expecting our first child, and you had just had your son, and you're encouraging me about looking forward to it, and you'd like 2 or 3 months head start or something. Yeah. And from there, it's just been a journey that I couldn't describe. I think it's been. People talk about brotherhood as a word, but for me, it's real. You know what I mean?
Like, likewise.
It's so real because we couldn't be more different, but we couldn't be even more alike. Like, there's just so many things that was, and I felt so emotional when you had to leave Lusaka because it meant so much for me because you're going in the right place, to the right place, actually. I'm so at peace with that. But at the same time, I knew we couldn't, like, have you around and all that sort of stuff. But it's been such a journey. We've been entwined, in a way, having similar stories, but so different steps along the way. And we've seen the downs and up. We're still going to see a lot of those, but you've been there through the whole period that I took my leave, and you've you've seen me at my lowest. You've seen me at the top. So, man, it's just
great. So did you.
Yeah, you
picked me up when we were down. So.
Right. So, it's just great to...
It's two-way street, that's for sure.
Right. So, I mean, I've got great, great things to say about you, endless things, but I want the listeners to know you from your own words, and I mean, tell them a backstory, where you're from, and where you are now.
Yeah, well, originally from Eastern Europe, and after a couple of years in America, and about 12 years in Australia, where I met my wife. She's obviously local, African. Decided to relocate here and raise the family here.
Yeah. And when you talk about relocating to Africa, I mean, you've been through different countries, and from Europe to the US to Australia, and finally Africa. What was the main for you coming to a decision that we're gonna go back to Africa and start our family there? How did you get to that point?
There's number of ways to tackle this question. From my personal angle, I never felt home in Australia. There's always been a void. I did not feel particularly happy. I was on the chase money train, and no matter how much I climbed on the quote unquote corporate ladder, it didn't have it didn't reflect in my happiness, to put it simply. So once we got serious with my wife, and she insisted on having kids, which wasn't really on my radar previously, I had a hard look on our situation and our life over there in Australia, which to average Eastern European or average African would be, I'd say, desirable.
Yeah.
But we sort of felt we are not maximizing. I think I didn't see the Australian environment as a place where I wanted to raise my child. And since I personally didn't feel at home there, I wasn't of the mindset that it would be fair to raise a child in such an environment. So on our honeymoon, we went to Africa. We visited a number of countries. We spent about 6 months here, 6 weeks here. And I've seen the family support that my wife has here, all the brothers, sisters, uncles, aunties. So I just put one and one together, and it was far better option than try to make it in Australia and just chase the money and hope your child turns up okay,
right,
without having too much imprint on it yourself. That's quite a long answer to your question. You started with quite a difficult question. So we were supposed to chat about basketball, something to begin with, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, but let's hit it hard. Let's hit it hard.
Because from making the jump all the way from Australia to coming to Africa, that's a leap, bro. And you are looking for something, but there are so many unknowns. So that jump itself is part of the whole journey of looking for something much better than what you have. I mean, and the leap means that you're giving up something and giving up that life of comfort and that sort of thing. So I think it's perfect that you start from there, because then you're giving a good picture of what you're not just, okay, look, things are up here, let's go to Africa, but you had a life there, you know, things going on, what, as you said, people term desirable, and leaving that behind to seek something that's more special in an environment that could give it you. That's definitely my perspective.
I mean, you said it, it was precisely, I basically took a leap of faith, because a lot of things didn't make sense to me over there. And I'm struggling to answer this question properly without going too deep initially into all these things that you know about me.
Right, right.
Which would make it much easier to answer. But even my wife took some convincing, you know.
Right.
All my friends, my family, my colleagues, they thought I'm insane in moving to Africa. Like, I was on a very nice paycheck, I'm not gonna lie, but I could see it over the decade, over the dozen years that I spent there, that I was convinced that even another pay rise or the pay rise after that is not going to have any significant difference to my happiness, to put it plainly.
And that's where I sort of, it takes me back to the thing about you that we connected on that level. It's just the fact that it was so difficult for me, particularly, to convince everybody that what I was, or anybody for that matter, that what I was doing made sense. I was giving up a life that's quote unquote straightforward. And then for someone to, I think you don't remember this, but the first thing you asked me when I told you I'm leaving work, I quit work, was, but you're good? I remember that very well, but you're good. Yeah, good. And you didn't understand the specifics at the time, but I got the sense that you understood what that took, even though there was still a lot of things that you're going to go through as well. But there wasn't any sort of judgment. We were culturally different, and we're just getting to know one another, but there wasn't that sort of judgment. Like you were speaking from some level, I understand. And then when you got to get the details, and slowly, I may add, it just kind of, you never pulled me away. Like you understood what I was trying to do, and we just were able to kind of feed off of that, because it's really hard to explain to anybody that I'm leaving something that's good, or so it seems, for something that's better. And what do you know about this better? Well, I don't know much, but I hope I get it right, or I hope it works out. That makes no sense to anybody. And I think that's something that I felt resonated from the way it goes, because it's very difficult, man.
It's you can analyze it and try to put a finger on it, but you can't really do that. I think it comes down to listening to your gut feeling. If it doesn't feel right, there's gotta be a bigger reason or bigger contributing factor why this particular lifestyle is not working for you. So why not try something else? At the end of the day, if it doesn't work out, you can always go back. But from our understanding, especially me, I pretty much did the burn the boats on arrival approach. So for me, my mind was made up, and I need to give a shout out to my wife. She made all this happen and possible in Africa. Without her and without her strength, we wouldn't have made it here. This is not an environment where you can come and start experimenting, because Africa will chew you up and spit you out in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So without my wife, none of this would be possible. You know her really well.
Okay.
She's to put it even to say it, she's amazing. It's understatement.
Right.
Obviously, she thinks I never say these things about her. So she made sure when I was leaving this morning to remind me to say nice things about her on the podcast.
So you have something to go back to.
So yeah. So the doors will be open, hopefully. No, but on the serious note,
yeah.
No, she made it all happen. It took a while for her to fully get on board with the African move. It probably took 4.5-5 years for her to really give up on the idea of going somewhere else, perhaps going to Australia again. Well, she mentioned Canada several times and whatnot, but now I'm fairly certain she's fully in.
Yeah.
The things are starting to work out. As you well aware, we had a tough stretch for almost 2 years where we had to take an insurance company to court, which really dragged us down. And also thanks to you, I don't know. Maybe we would have made it. I say I don't think we would have made it, but it was extremely rough. So I really thank you from the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate you for being there for us, for me. And I'm sure even for you, it wouldn't have been easy to see what we were experiencing. Because you were also going through your own struggle at the same time.
Yeah.
So to support me through the time, I really appreciate it.
Well, I would do that any day. And I want to go back to the part about your wife and the importance of the support that you get from within, you know. When we talk about having someone in your corner, and just, you know, as a man, you're a vision carrier, you're the one who's at the front and leading, and yet the strength, that inner strength, the when you've reached the low points, like I've gotten to a point where like I'm done, I can't go on. There's some strength, inner strength that you couldn't explain that, and it's difficult without going into too much detail, obviously, but the support that you get from your spouse in this journey is absolutely paramount and it's understated, because you're almost like at the front of everything you're leading, but man, it's just something that I couldn't explain. In this journey, I feel like if I was on my own, I probably would have stepped back at some point, because then I'm like, why the hell would I want to go through this? I mean, it's a pursuit of whatever goal and lifestyle, but when you see the strength, And to your point, it takes a while for, it took a while for her to get on board. Similar with me, like, it took a while, but once she was in it, she was leading from the back. And I mean, we're going to talk about this sooner, but once she jumps on everything, you find that even when I can't drag on, she's pulling me back. And that support from your spouse is just such an important aspect.
It's a different level of support, right? Because to pick up on your point, like, my strength might be that I'm too dumb or too reckless or too naive or too, like, a big boss to just try things.
High optimism.
I'm being positive about things. But in all reality, it's like, it's not an easy job to raise a child.
No.
And to be a stay-home daddy, you can say it's not an easy job. But to navigate through African environment and to really make it through, once again, my wife made it possible. She was the one that pushed through. As she's local, she's more familiar with the local environment. So a lot of these responsibilities fell on her shoulders. Mm-hmm. When we were in Australia, I was more familiar with the place. I did all the paperwork for visas, for permits, for whatnot, all the technical stuff, sort of say. So when we moved to Africa, it's almost unfair from a conventional point of view to flip this and put all this responsibility on your wife's shoulders.
Yeah.
And luckily I don't care what people think about me.
Right.
Because if I did, like, as I mentioned previously, my friends, my colleagues, my family, they thought I was nuts. So when you put all this into picture, it's like, You're not even a man. You're not even like, what are you? What are you doing?
Right.
Are you here just for show?
Yeah.
Yeah. You are stay home daddy. So cool. But we pushed through. I think we both did a, let's pat ourselves on the shoulder.
Yeah.
We did a good job raising the boys.
Yeah.
Giving them solid foundation, which as you know, I didn't have a good relationship with my father growing up, so that was something extremely important to me.
Yeah.
To add to the original question of why leaving Australia, to be stay-home daddy in Australia, it's literally impossible from the financial standpoint. So yeah. It's not an easy topic to kickstart this virgin podcast.
Right. So we had a 2-year stretch when things had just hit a brick wall for both you and I, and we had this stretch when the only thing that could, like, lift us up was our boys. And we always called it daddy daycare, and, you know, and during that time, like, our focus was, okay, things are not going on right, but at least if there's a little thing we're going to get right, it's just being there for the boys, and then being a father, being present, because they're going to remember that. They may not remember the paycheck or that sort of thing, but we were set in stone that, like, we're gonna give them the best during the day, and then the rest of the night would be stressing about anything else,
yeah.
Everything that wasn't going right. And to your point, it's, and people think this is just, especially for Africans, they think this is just an African culture where a man is a breadwinner.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere, it's the world over. I mean, are a leader, you are leading your family, and you are leading your, from providing security, providing shelter, providing a meal. And when that's not a prominent role, and you don't have a formal job that people attribute to a provision and a providing father, a father figure, it just becomes a whole, like, it goes back to my earlier podcast. Everyone has something to say about it. Everyone has an opinion to say, but then, so your wife is taking care of you, and both you and I have our spouses who work. And there's all this talk about maybe, oh, there's probably, they're probably making it because the spouse works, and, or they have a stash of cash. And then it always changes to a point where, but you can't just sit as a man. You can't just sit. And the reason I'm regurgitating this is because you really have to have the attitude to not care about what people think or say. Because actually people who have an opinion and don't understand what is the real story is can't really understand that. But personally, you just need to have that, like, you don't care what people think. Otherwise, you will crash and burn quickly. And then the second bit I sort of picked up from my journey is you can't explain everything to everybody. You can't just, well, this is how exactly we're living, this is how we're making it, and all that sort of thing. Because you need to have that mental fortitude to not care, because people are going, a man can sit at home and take care of a child. And because being at home and there are kids who are like one and a half to 2 years old, means you're doing the whole thing from changing diapers to playing with them, feeding them, and all that sort of thing. And not many men are doing that. When you see the reciprocation from the child, the joy in the child, I mean, you couldn't buy it. It's such a priceless thing that at the end of it all, it fortifies that I don't care what people say or don't care what people think. And that kept us going for 2 years.
I think, as we spoken to your wife earlier, and I had a simple answer to one of her questions, which was, I run my own race. You can't really fully explain your motivation and your angle to everyone. And even if you did, people have their own issues and struggles to push through. And in other two cases are similar, because it comes to your priorities. We prioritized being the mentally and physically for our kids, and we sort of how to put it, we cut on the materialistic component, which I'm confident and comfortable to say that kids don't really care about it.
Yeah.
As long as daddy is there, as long as mommy is there, the kids don't really care what's happening. As long as the attention is there almost 24/7, they are happy campers.
Right.
And up until now, the boys are almost six. Even the concept of work, when our wives go to work, I often have to explain why it's mommy going to work. So the concept of work, even at the age of six, is still sort of foreign. So it takes a lot of sacrifice and a lot of conviction in your priorities. The world we live in, I don't look at other about the man in a funny way, because they choose to provide in a more of a materialistic way. Okay, it's their choice. It's what they believe is the right thing to do. We are probably on an extreme level of providing the physical and mental presence, but if we could strike a nice equilibrium in between, it would be nice to provide certain things to these kids. But once you strip down to the bare bones and economic reality hits you, and you also learn to prioritize what to buy, what not to buy, you sort of realize that it's your preconceived notions that you should really have this, you should really have that. You can go without a lot of those things that you previously thought are essential. I'm not sure if it makes sense, but hopefully as we go, we'll add more pieces to the puzzle.
Yeah, I certainly resonate, because and this is something that I don't like to go into, like how comfortable a space we were in, personally I was in and you were in terms of living that life. So to strip it down for ourselves, I mean, is rewiring of the mind. Like you're starting over, and there's already some knowledge you have about what life could be just by a change of a choice. And then you are where you are. But to your point, when the kids are born into a certain structure or a certain lifestyle, they are taught that lifestyle and they adopt that lifestyle. And
that's the only reality they know.
They know. That's the best way to put it. That's the only reality they know. And sometimes, and this speaks to some of the questions that I've had before, where people ask, you are robbing the child. And you're robbing the child of.
But when I believe when you say this statement comes from the materialistic
ego. Yes.
But in my conviction, it's heavily supplemented by the mental and physical presence,
right,
for the kids,
because the materialistic thing you could catch up anytime, but once you rob the child of, or let me not use the words that people use, but once you are not providing the mental and physical need for the child of a father or a parent, it's not something you can go back and say, okay, we'll catch up. It's gone. It's moments. It's time. That when you spend a moment with a child, with your daughter or a son, it's a moment. That moment is a precious moment. If you didn't buy a cool bike or something that you can't afford or whatever, maybe a bad example, but you can always, at one point or the other, you can catch up with that, and you never say we lost the moment. You manage to get the resources that you're able to provide that sort of a thing, but the presence of a parent, the presence of a father specifically, is, you can't buy that with all the money in the world. So it's a very cardinal thing, and it motivated me for a while. It motivated me during the downturn. If that's the only thing I could do, I was gonna do that.
I mean, we don't. This topic might sound like we professing that we are experts in raising kids, but we in my personal case. I had a very, very bad relationship with my father growing up. So once I decided and made that conscious choice to start a family, I didn't want to follow the same sort of generational steps that you see repeating in a lot of Eastern European households. So I try to just do the opposite, to put it simply.
Right.
And I'm still learning. I'm still learning. It's an amazing opportunity to have the privilege to not really raise. I try not to interfere too much. I'm just try to sort of nudge in this direction, or sort of navigate or shepherd the child through.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you want to touch on the homeschooling aspect a bit.
Yeah.
in the later part of the interview.
Yeah.
But I'm more of the free range sort of approach.
Yeah.
So as long as the certain rules are observed, the child has a free range.
Right.
So I dare say that it's working for me. And once again, whether my family or my friends like it, or whoever may be looking at us from a different angle, we are running our own race. We have these conversations with our partners, and it's a teamwork where none of this would be possible if we weren't on the same page at all.
That's just none of it for sure.
There's still arguments. There's still disagreements about certain things. But as long as we prioritize the child, which in our household, raising our son is the priority,
yeah.
And the rest of the things sort of fall into place.
Yeah.
So. That's where I'm at, sort of.
Yeah, it's great to end on that note, particularly on that topic, priorities, because that's the most important thing, and also teamwork with spouses and as a family. Speaking of priorities, at one time, well, basketball for you and I is like a big thing, and I think priority doesn't do justice to what basketball was growing up and playing it and actively playing it through all the different stages of life. And nowadays, you and I both play at our age. I'm not going to review what that is, but we still play a lot.
Still young.
You're very young. We still play basketball. I think playing is more of a priority now than the whole game of basketball. We watch the NBA, talk the NBA 24/7 and all that, argue about the results and championships and all that. I mean, part of the journey taking us thus far and to get to a point where playing basketball, we play it not as much, not nearly enough, obviously, because priorities are this, but how does something that you love, like basketball, basketball in terms of watching the NBA, watching the EuroLeague, being able to play, even when you move to Africa, you're able to play basketball in the Zambian League for a bit, and to get to a point where, you know what, I can a point where I'm comfortable with just getting the result and all that.
Before I get to the MBA, once again, I have to go back to my wife.
Yeah.
And in my relationships, even in my past relationships, I always made it very clear, and this is advice for the youngsters going into relationships. When you have something that you are extremely passionate about, you have to make it clear that, no, this is a huge part of your life. And, of course, I explained it to my wife. That, no, basketball, honey, was he before you. And whether this works out or not, it will be he after you. So she's extremely understanding. She's extremely supportive of me working out 3, 4, 5 times a week. Get my basketball fix on the weekend. So I'm forever grateful. Baby, I love you. But basketball was here before you. So I had to get that off my chest. Basketball's been a refuge for me. Okay? Growing up, having it tough at home, if you wanted to find me growing up, you find me at the basketball court. So to put it plainly, it was my refuge. I was fortunate enough to play pro, semi-pro, you can't even call it pro compared to NBA, from the age of 16, I had a bad back injury when I was about 21, which I thought was going to cut my basketball days short. But I pushed through it. Took me several years to figure it out, to sort of fix my back myself or manage it in a way where, with a correct approach, I can still play, though I'm 40 plus, I can still play once or twice a week if I want
to. It's not once or twice a week, bro.
No, but it comes with a lot of work. You know, you have to do some cardio, you have to do some core exercises in my case, a lot of stretching. I do ice baths and whatnot, just to be able to push, because my idea is to squeeze as much out of his body as possible before I drop. And it comes in conjunction with our approach of raising kids. I want to be there fully able-bodied for my son. So I can't say, no, I'm tired, I can't do this, or no, I don't feel like doing it. I have to keep at a certain fitness level to be able to not enjoy these moments with my son. So that sort of go hand in hand for me.
Yeah, because there are only two people I know that are serious about fitness levels in terms of, and they love basketball as well. It's you and my brother. Like, he will do cross training, he runs, you and him, like, run probably. I run, but I think I'm not a running junkie like you. I can do 3 times a week and all that, but I'll not prioritize that because I work on my body differently. But the only two people that I know who work out and prioritize their fitness in a way that prepares them and in conjunction with basketball. My brother does play basketball. We play basketball with him from when we were younger, late in our teens and all that. But he's much more serious now with basketball. Yeah, Ralph is now serious than he was before. But he runs literally the whole week, and you too. Every time I talk to you, it's about like you run. But then this is so important because it's not just you're preparing your body to play, but it's also preparing your body to be able to deal with the many things that you're dealing with. That, like, being a father is a physically demanding job, especially when you're a father to young toddlers going into the youth age. They'll be running about, they'll want to be active and all that. And it's preparing yourself to be able to play, but not only play basketball, play with. So it's really important to have like your cardio and your fitness to be there. I prepare my body differently, especially after my surgery. I do run, but I know my body a little more. But yeah, you're talking about how basketball your first love, and how you played it, and your back injury. Tell me your love about with the NBA Pro League, and I know somebody who's ultimately your favorite player growing up, and he's retired and all that. But I just wanna know, like, how you jump on the bandwagon of the NBA back in the day, and what's that transition to where we are now?
I mean, growing up, every child, every kid, every youngster, I think, wants to be in the NBA. You know, so you sort of dream about that, and very few reach that point. But obviously, the retired player, the favorite of mine, is MJ, Michael Jordan, and there's no discussion. By the way, there's no LeBron or all these things. As I get older, I watch NBA less and less. It's, the older I get, the more I appreciate playing it. The more I value the marginal improvement, or the ability to stay at certain level and still go out there and cook youngsters half my age. So watching NBA, it's not really on a daily menu. You might wake up early and West Coast game is on, so you'll catch last 5 minutes of a fourth quarter or something like that. But unless it's playoff, I wouldn't go out of my way to wake up and seek it out. So I don't know if that's the answer you were looking for, but. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, because, I mean, my idea of this is, like, the love I had for basketball and the obsession, I still do have that obsession, and more about playing it though than watching it, was just so much. I mean, even if you look at us 5 years ago, you know, talking about the NBA, getting stressed about what's happening in the playoffs and all that, to get to a point where, it's a by the way, and while generally it's almost all sport for us, I mean, it's a big deal. And it's a big deal coming from people who love basketball. And in a way, it kind of reminds me that if the love to watch it is waning, some point is coming to terms with the fact that one day I'll not be able to play as we do. I don't know what day that.
No, I refuse.
I suppose it's death, right?
No, that's about it.
Because I don't know any single day when I wake up and I don't find a message from my brother about basketball and he drags me to the NBA. Well, at least he's termed now because Zion Williamson is hurt.
That's his boy.
Yeah, that was his boy. Williamson was his boy. But I was excited. Yeah, so
put gun to my head, it's crispo for me. Point God.
You've been excited about crispo since 2003.
Crispo is the purest point out there at the moment.
I can't agree.
So I always said to you that if I could play like someone, it would be this man. Because we are the same height, we are the similar body type.
Yeah.
And I'm attracted to players that you can clearly say have maximized their basketball potential. So to be 6'1" stay in NBA for, what is it, like 17, 18 years?
Yeah.
Something ridiculous, and still doing the things he's doing at his age. It's absolutely amazing to me.
Speaking of Crispo did translate into a plant-based diet.
Oh!
Yep.
There you go. It took him a while to figure it out. Damn it.
Yeah.
He kept on getting injured.
Yeah, so he did.
Made it difficult for me to defend him.
And it's night and day from where he was to then. I mean, once he spoke about changing his diet from cutting out the red meat and going into a plant-based diet, he said there was a big change. And I know you have, both of us right now are like vegetarian, right?
How many podcasts have you done? Look at this seamless transition. Or sound like scripted.
Yeah, I'm getting the hang of it. So you and I are both pescatarian, and if you
want to label us, sure.
Right, if you want to label us, we basically changed our diet. But when you introduced me to this kind of stuff, to think about this, and my reasons for that have nothing to do with medical reasons or that sort of thing, but for me it's just educating myself. When you talked about the, because you were vegan, like full on when I first met you, and I asked you a couple of questions, but I went to educate myself, and it resonated with where I was with my body and what I was vegan, and I was like, I'm going to try. I'm not gonna be like full out vegan, but I'm gonna predominantly vegetables and I still do eggs and dairy and whatnot. And I've never looked back. You know, tell me what it was like for you, like to be able to. I know you told me it was a cold turkey moment, like you just dropped it all and left it. And then also transitioning from that full-on vegan into being able to balance it out.
It's a long story, and since we have plenty of time, with my back injury, I wasn't able to do any physical activity for about 6 months. So I put a lot of weight on, and then I left for Australia. I was sort of just chasing the dollar, chasing the dream of making more money, and neglecting my health. And I ended up topping at 123 kgs, believe me or not. Yep, that was a scary moment, but I still couldn't figure it out how to get rid of it. I was still keeping active. I was still working out. I was still playing basketball, believe me or not, at those weights. And eventually, I was working on a project with a gentleman from Iran. And he was a hardcore vegan. And he was a very interesting man. Everyone was making fun of him. I just thought to myself one day, like, hang on a second, this guy is onto something. So I didn't judge, I kept an open mind, and we go to talk. He was explaining to me bit by bit. He gave me some documentaries to watch, which I have. And we had a vacation planned in Thailand. And I told him, when I come back from Thailand, I'll be several kilos heavier. Mm. And I'll give this a try. I'll give it a try for 1 month. Follow you blindly, no question asked. So I remember it like today. I came back from Thailand. I was 117 kgs. And I went on to the plant-based diet. I watched some Fork Over Knives documentaries, some other documentaries, but the Fork Over Knives is the one I remember. So I tried it, literally cold turkey. Now in the first week, I lost 10 kgs. I could not believe it. In the first month, I lost 15 kgs. And in the 6 months, I lost 31, 32 kgs or thereabouts.
Massive.
And it was literally effortless. So all these years, I've been trying to figure out how to get back in reasonable shape. And it was all in diet, you know, it was all in what you put in your mouth. Mm. So since then I haven't really tampered with it. I just stuck with it, and I'm sure the next question is the sort of transition. I'm not dogmatic about it, I'm not preaching it. When we met, I was really excited about it, when I was talking to you about it, because it really changed my life. I can say it saved my life. Yeah. And it's not for everyone.
No.
Everyone's body operates differently, but I would encourage everyone to at least give it a try for a month or so. It is not hard, in my opinion. I don't think it's hard, but it's important. It's inconvenient if you want to go to social events or a restaurant, or you want to visit someone. It's inconvenient for those other parties involved.
Yeah.
Or if you want to order in a restaurant, it takes a little bit of navigating.
Yeah.
And who really wants to go through that on day-to-day basis? No, I can't have this. I can't have that. It's a little bit restrictive.
It is, and I think you're right when you say it's inconvenient for a lot of other people, because you can't eat out. Like, I literally do not eat out, no matter how you can find a way around it. I would rather not eat. And at first, people think you're snobbish about it, but it's over time, like. In my family, I got acceptance of it, but it's still hard for me. But one thing that for me was huge was I got to know different ways of preparing food that I had to eat. You know, I only knew like the African way of preparing vegetables, because they're always like side dishes to meals that you eat. But then eating that kind of food every day, every meal, was getting hard for me in the early days. And I was wondering, this food is boring and all that. And I had to open my mind up to different ways of preparing dishes so I could like make them more palatable and exciting. And tell you what, it changed the world for my family, like specifically my wife and son, like to look at it differently in terms of how we eat our food, we could prepare it in different, it's so exciting that my wife still eats meat, but she's almost a ceremonial eater now. Like, she enjoys that side of the dishes, because there's another way of eating them. And part of it was your wife, like the way she cooks vegetables and prepares those dishes. Like, no, I want to enjoy this, but it's exciting. And that's was that part of the journey in Thailand, was that?
I told you people, my wife is amazing. Once again, I have to give her a shout out.
Yeah.
She's an amazing cook.
Please do not forget to mention the deep fried mushrooms.
Yeah. That's actually one of my favorite dishes from back home.
Yeah.
We do the deep fried mushrooms back home. So she's an amazing cook. When we went to Thailand a couple of times, we even did cooking lessons. So she can literally cook authentic curry from the local ingredients that you can buy here. And I dare say it's a restaurant quality. It's extremely difficult to spot the difference. So once again, baby, I love you. You're the best. Shout outs and all the big ups to you. So
you're paying your dues for sure.
Yes, it's nice to be done.
No commercial. This is commercial free, by the way.
Yeah,
we have to pay our dues for our airtime.
She's not paying me for it. She's not paying me for it.
Yeah.
Often, I'm sure, often she feels underappreciated, but no, I do appreciate her in many, many ways.
Wow, this conversation was so good and long that we had to split it into two parts. And in part two, Pete talks more about the plant-based diet, homeschooling, and the origin of the Pretender podcast and his contribution to it. Please look out for part two and hear more of Pete's intriguing experiences and story. Thanks for listening. This is the Pretender podcast. I'm out.